Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where our job is to help you build visibility, professional credibility, and connection with your ideal client by putting the human at the center of innovative marketing, so you can build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship with your ideal clients. I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm honored that you're here with me. If you haven't joined our wonderful marketing transformation community yet, go to innovabiz.co and collect your free gift as well. Do subscribe to the show and also leave a review because it helps others find us. Let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
The rate limiting step in design thinking is the first one, which is empathy, which means let go of anything you're selling, anything you have, anything your skills are, and really be a first-class noticer to where your customer client is coming from, what they really need and want, as opposed to you needing and wanting them to buy what you have.
Welcome back. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. Now, if you haven't yet listened to my recent conversations with former lead solo pilot of the Blue Angels and developer of the Fearless Success System, John Foley, as well as on-demand CFO Mr. Biz, Ken Wentworth, then do go listen to them, but after you've listened to today's episode. I'm really excited to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest today, Dr. Mark Goulston. He's the author of the books Get Out of Your Own Way, Just Listen, Talking to Crazy, and a few others. He's host of the My Wake Up Call podcast. Mark was a UCLA professor of psychiatry for over 25 years and a former FBI and police hostage negotiation trainer. He's been a change facilitator to Fortune 500 leaders, entrepreneurs, and educators. He's an influencer who helps other influencers become more influential. Mark has contributed to the Harvard Business Review, Business Insider, The Huffington Post, Fast Company, Psychology Today, Working Nation, and Thrive Global, and appears widely in the media, including CNN, The Wall Street Journal, The New York Times, Fortune, and Forbes. So I'm really pleased to be talking to Mark today, and in our discussion, we talk about being a first-class noticer to really understand your audience and your clients. Mark highlighted that it was important to focus your attention on what the other person is listening for, and he explained how to become compelling. Without further ado, then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Mark Goulston. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today from Los Angeles in California, obviously the USA, Dr. Mark Goulston, who's one of the world's foremost experts on empathy and listening. He's the author of the books Get Out of Your Own Way, Just Listen, Talking to Crazy, among other things, and among other books, and he's also the host of the My Wake Up Call podcast. Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Mark. It's a real privilege to have you as my guest.
Well, maybe you need to raise your bar there, Jürgen. I'm glad to be on. I'm happy to be on.
Dr. Gleb Sapirsky, who is our guest on episode 271 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, introduced us and suggested that we have a conversation with you, Mark. So a big shout out to Gleb.
He's been great. He's terrific.
Now, I know one of the things that you're really passionate about is leadership and empathy and listening, and I'm really looking forward to digging into that some more. But before we do that, tell us a little bit about your background. Give us a
kind of a whistle-stop tour of how you got to where you are today and what were some of the pivotal moments in that journey?
Well, I was trained as a psychiatrist, and my specialty was actually suicide prevention, and I was a boots-on-the-ground interventionist, and none of my patients died by suicide in 30 years. And you'll appreciate this in being innovative, because I've been trying to figure out what I did that worked. And I think what I did is, when I was with these multiple attempters, I had the choice to follow a protocol and check boxes and look in their eyes and have them look at me with a look that said, "You're checking boxes and I'm running out of time." So I threw away the boxes, and I learned to listen into people's eyes. And when you learn to listen into people's eyes without an agenda, without having to put them into a box, without having to do something to confirm your own bias, and you look into their eyes and listen with what we call a beginner's mind, which is that you're open to anything that you see. What I noticed is people were screaming out through their eyes, "I'm running out of time. Help me. I don't want to kill myself, but I can't take it anymore." And when they saw in our eye contact that I saw that part of them, and what happened is I stopped trying to push solutions on them, because I could feel that when I was pushing solutions on them, it was to create a barrier between their desperation and me. So I threw away the solutions and I just started to listen. And do we have time for an anecdote that I think?
Sure.
It'll be riveting. I'm not sure if it'll be relevant, but it's the basis of my book, Just Listen, which I'm very humbled by. It became the top book on listening in the world, and it's in 25 languages. And I headline in with Daniel Kahneman, the Nobel Prize winner in Moscow a few months ago. But Just Listen is about how do you listen into people so that they feel felt by you, which is not the same thing as just feeling understood. When people feel understood, they nod from the neck up. But when people feel felt, especially if they feel they're losing time, they lean into it. So there was one anecdote, and then I don't want to belabor it, but I think it's a story that seems to be a showstopper. So one of my early mentors was one of the top pioneers in studying suicide, and he would refer all these highly suicidal people to me. He'd go do a consultation up on the inpatient wards at UCLA, and in order to be discharged, these people had to be, someone had to take them on the outside. And a number of the residents didn't want to see them because they were still suicidal, but they weren't acutely suicidal. So he would call me when he was with them and he'd say, "You know, I'm with this handsome young man. I'm with this lovely young woman. You could help them, Mark, see them." And then I would see them. And there was one special patient that I'll call Nancy. And I was seeing her for about 6 months. She'd made 3 or 4 attempts before I saw her, had been in the hospital multiple months for multiple years. And I didn't think I was helping her, Jurgen. I mean, she'd come in, she wouldn't make eye contact. And I didn't think I was getting anywhere except she hadn't made an attempt. And I was moonlighting one weekend, which means working at a hospital and doing admissions and seeing patients on the wards. And so sometimes you go without sleep for 30, 36 hours or something. So I came in on a Monday and there is Nancy never making eye contact. And as I'm in the room with her, all the color in the room, as I'm looking out in the room, turns to black and white. So I'm looking out in a room that's black and white, and I suddenly felt very cold, and I thought, I'm having a stroke or a seizure. So she wasn't looking at me, and it wasn't rude, and I'm a medical doctor, psychiatrist, so I did a neurologic exam on myself. You know, I'm tapping my knees, I'm tapping my elbows, I'm looking at my fingers, and I said, well, I'm not having a stroke or a seizure. Then I had this crazy idea that I was looking out at the world through her eyes. That's what she felt. And because I was sleep deprived, I blurted something out that I probably wouldn't have if I wasn't sleep deprived, because I essentially gave her permission to kill herself. I said, "Nancy, I didn't know it was so bad, and I can't help you kill yourself. But if you do, I will still think well of you. I'll miss you. And maybe I'll understand why you had to get out of all the pain." And I thought, I think I just gave her permission to kill herself. What did I say? And that was the first time she made eye contact. And I thought she was going to say, thank you. Thank you for understanding. I'm overdue. And I said, what are you thinking? And she looked right through me. You know, for someone who made no eye contact, she looked right through me. And she said, if you can really understand how I might have to kill myself to get out of the pain, maybe I won't need to. And then she smiled. So what happened is it's what I call, if you're familiar with CRISPR and what it does to genes, it's something that I've developed called targeted interventional empathy, which is going into the hopelessness and the dark night of the soul of people and keeping them company there until they cry. And then when they cry, they feel relief. And when they feel relief, and there's a whole neuroscience behind this, they feel relief and they're able to have a constructive conversation with you as opposed to being shut down. And so that's the approach I've taken. Now, if you're a coach or a consultant, so I want to segue, what's it? You'll say, well, that's an interesting story, Dr. Goldstein, or some people have already tuned up. Well, how can that help us? Well, what was interesting in the talk that I give in Moscow along with Daniel Kahneman, and four of my books are bestsellers in Russia, and especially the book Just Listen is a bestseller there. And there's videos, YouTubes of me in Russia, little short clips. And what I said to the 1,000 Russians who are, you know, managers, CEOs, and this is the big takeaway from this, if you're listening to this. I said, if I focus on what you're listening to me, and I delivered a bunch of bullet points, you'll write down the bullet points. You might try a few of them. You'll give me your mind for an hour if I'm entertaining or engaging. But it's basically a transactional conversation in which you will give me your mind for an hour. And then I said, but if I instead focus on what you're listening for, and I get what that is without you telling me, and I deliver on that, you'll give me everything. And then I said, tell me if this is what you're listening for. And they heard me in Russian. And when you go to YouTube, you'll see the voiceover of me explaining what I did. And so here's an example, Jurgen, of focusing on what they're listening for. And when I finish this story, I'm going to tell you what you're listening for, which you don't even know yet. So I hope you're game.
Yeah.
And I said, let me see if this is what you're listening for. If you're a manager, your CEO, first thing you're listening for is you are judged not by performance, but by results and measurable results. The more measurable results you get, the more likely you get a promotion or a demotion. Is that true? Da. Second thing you're listening for is you'd like to get better results in a way that's less stressful, because the way you're doing it now is causing stress. It's making you drink and eat too much. Your people are drinking and eating too much. It's a real mess. And so you're listening for something that will get you better results. It's less stressful because all the stress is not very good. Is that true too? And they go, da. And then I said, and finally, here's the main thing. You're listening for me to give you doable by you tactics that you can use immediately to get better results with less stress, and they're doable by you. You don't have to buy a course because I don't have a course. You don't have to buy the book because I haven't written this book yet. But it's doable by you, and if you can use it immediately, then today will have been worth all the money you paid and the time you reserved for today. Is that true too? And they go, oh, duh. So that's an example of focusing on what people are listening for. So I'm going to do that with you, Jurgen. And tell me if it feels different. Because normally, you know, you're a host and you listen to me and I'm trying to be, you know, somewhat relevant. And I'm checking things and you'll follow off that. But this is what I think you're listening for. What you're listening for is you want this podcast to give incredible value to the listeners. You're listening for something that they can use immediately so that they tell their friends and colleagues, you got to check out this podcast. And you're looking to give them something where someone isn't selling them on so much, because that will offend them if you have someone on as a guest who's doing a hard sell. You're also listening for a terrible guest who might have a wonderful book, but you can't post the podcast because they're so boring or too salesy, and you want to protect your listeners from that. And you're listening for someone that you hope you won't have to call back and say, you know, I'm sorry, we can't post it. So is any of that accurate?
Yeah, I think you've nailed the key points. And certainly, I mean, touching on the first point there in terms of giving incredible value, that certainly is one of the primary purposes of the podcast, giving incredible value to my audience. And I think the stories that you've opened up with are, you know, they can be a metaphor for that value and how I can create value for my audience with the content I put out there. And I think it's a metaphor for all empathetic marketing, as I like to call it, or human focused marketing. So I'd love to explore that some more, but you certainly nailed what I'm listening for. Yeah.
And in fact, when I just asked you, and I was taking a chance, you could have said, sorry, Mark, you missed it. What happened is, because I nailed it, what you said is, you really got that, and you went, And the was, it surprised you that I nailed it in a good way. And the you just said it again.
Yeah.
And the is, you took it in because you wanted to savor it, because it just felt like I got where you were coming from, what you're trying to do, which is something that when you said, that's savoring it. And that's what you want to do.
That's right. Yeah.
That's what you want to do as a consultant or a coach. You want them to get from you, you got my situation. You get where I'm coming from personally in my situation, and you get where I'm really wanting this to go. And I haven't told you anything. Wow. I wonder what else you know about me. Not in a bad way. But tell me more about me. And so here are some tips on how to do that. One of my favorite quotes that's in my book, Just Listen, comes from Wilfred Bion. He was a British psychoanalyst, and he said, the purest form of listening or connecting is to listen to people without memory or desire. Because when you listen with memory, you have an old personal agenda that you're trying to plug them into, or you have a new personal agenda that you're trying to plug them into and close them, but you're not really listening to them. And so in my book, Just Listen, I say, what you really want to be is a PAL, and PAL stands for purposeful, agendaless listening. Purposeful, agendaless listening. Because when people pick up your agenda, they will pull back, they'll be polite, they'll smile, but they may not engage with you.
Yeah, I love that. I love the idea of the PAL.
And something, it's interesting, I'm getting lots of business, especially from techies who don't know how to engage with people. And what I'm telling them is, you've got to be compelling to open people's minds and convincing to get them to hire you. But too often people are convincing before they're compelling. And one of the problems with trying to be convincing too soon is you eliminate their ability to choose to hire you because you're so busy pushing you down their throat. And compelling is, you want to open them up so they can choose to hear more from you. And when I coach people, I say, what is the least that you can say to someone where they say, tell me more, How does that work, or how do you work with people? What is the least that you can say? Because then what you do is you build momentum of them coming towards you. So can I outline how people can do this? Because people, you know, again, people want the bottom line.
Yeah, I'd love to. That was yes.
So I wrote an article, I think you can find it somewhere, called The Secret to Closing More Sales is Never Answer a Question in the First Meeting. I thought that would grab your, that's a hmm and a laugh. So your jargon's engaged for all you people. So, and you have to adapt this to your own way of approaching people. But here's what it is, you know, you get people talking about, you know, so, you know, what are some of your pressing issues? What are some of the things you want to improve? Oh, here's the nuance. I will often say to people, what is something that you can get even better at? And the even is a helpful word, because if you say to someone, what is something you can get better at? Many people interpret that as criticism. When you say, what can you get better at? It feels like their parent saying you're wrong, and it triggers defensiveness. But if you say, you know, what is something you can get even better at? Do you see that it's a subtle difference, but it's not a negative thing?
Yeah, very much.
And then they talk about whatever it is, and here's what you listen for. You listen for hyperbole, such as awful, amazing, horrible, terrific. So you listen for those words, and you listen for inflection when they raise their voice, because all of those are tip of the iceberg, emotionally charged words and language. And so when they talk about that, and what you want them to do is open up more and more to you, because the more they open up to you, the more they want to hear what you have to say. And so you listen for that. And sometimes when they open up, they're going to be curious. They're going to say, well, what do you think? And actually what they're thinking is, what do you think of me? Did I go on too much? Do I sound like an idiot? Do I sound like I know what I'm talking about? So there's a subtle undertone about if they think they've talked too much, they'll say, what do you think? And you say, I could tell you what I think, but say more about the amazing, or say more about the awful. And when they raise their voice, this is something we need to address. Yes, say more about this is something we need more to address. And so you're going through the layers of an onion, and then they tell you more. And then you, what you want to go is deeper and deeper, because the more they reveal to you, the more you're different than your competition, and the more they're going to be wanting to know what you have to say, because they're telling you more than they tell everyone. And then as they keep telling you things, they're going to say, so what do you think? What do you think? You know, you've opened up the hood. You know, you see everything. You see the boot. You see the hood. I've shown you everything. What do you think? And even then you could say, I can tell you what I think, but I've been listening as you talk to what's most important, critical, and urgent for you. And they're going to say, what? Yeah, important is like a year from now. Critical is 3 to 5 months. Urgent's this week. And I could guess what those things are. But rather than my guessing, you can tell me stuff we haven't talked about. What is important, critical, and urgent? Because what you really want them to do is talk about what's urgent. You know, because that's I got to do that now. And then whenever they start talking, you say more about that. And they open up more and more. And so if you're following this, you have just opened them up in ways that nobody has opened them up. And at that point, they're going to say, so what do you think? and the key is you could say, you know, I could tell you what I think, but you've just shared with me things that are important, critical, and urgent to you. And I can tell you how we've worked with other companies, but it wouldn't be my best answer, because you've told me a lot and I want to check on some things, because I don't want to cheat you out of the best answer because you've told me so much. So the question is, how interested are you checking those things so I can come back to you and tell you my best answer? I don't want to tell you something that an hour later said, oh, I should have brought this up. But you've shared a lot with me, and it's really important. So what do you think? Do you want me to check into it so I can tell you what my best answer is? So what you've done is you've opened them up, got them to focus on what's urgent. got them wanting to know what you think, and you may already have the answer. You know, and so what you're doing is you want to create in them the desire to hear from you. And see, by not answering it, you've left them open and hanging. Now, sometimes they might say, no, that's okay. You can say, well, no, that's okay. You know, but if you change your mind, if you change your mind, let me know, because then I'll check into it. You know, because I'm not going to check into it if you don't want to hear from me again. But do you see the process there? Is so, and you have an answer to question. Can you follow that? I mean, it's...
Yeah, absolutely. It makes a lot of sense. I think the other thing about that is that simply by doing that, you help the person to articulate a lot of things that perhaps they haven't really given enough thought to, or is kind of in their unconscious and they haven't really articulated. I find sometimes just by asking a bunch of questions and without having said anything in terms of this is my idea or here's my suggestion, just by asking a bunch of questions and helping the other person articulate what's on their mind, that they have some aha moments.
Totally. And to be honest, a good coach, and I'll tell you, I'm a work in progress because I have so much, you know, I get away with a lot of this information. People find it sort of fascinating, but it's not good coaching. Because you want to be a learn-it-all, not a know-it-all. You know, and unfortunately, you know, when I'm called on these podcasts, you know, people say, oh, it's okay. It's okay, Dr. Gulston, because you seem to know a lot that we don't often hear. But my best self is the one that is being a purposeful, agendaless listener.
Yeah, that's really powerful, a purposeful agenda-less listener. Doesn't roll off the tongue that easy.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's why we say be a pal.
Yeah. Okay. Now, one of the things I'm really interested in is, and you've alluded to that a little bit in that story you've just told, but, you know, you opened up with the story of how you really connected deeply with people who were at risk of committing suicide, and how you actually, by building that deep connection, how you transform them and transform their lives, basically transform their attitudes. I'm thinking, you know, this is a metaphor for marketing. I mean, building that connection, that deep connection with an ideal client, when you first encounter them, just like you've described there, when somebody talks to you about what do you do, is really important. So talk to us a little bit more about building that empathy, having that empathetic listening in a marketing sense.
Well, I'm going to do a, I'll do a slight tangent because I coach the marketing. I coach the marketing aspect of companies and individuals. How do you be compelling? And something, and I'm involved in other things, but about 6 years ago, we had something called the Gulston Group. And what I thought about is, how do you create gotta have it? If you can create gotta have it, gotta buy it, gotta invest it, gotta hire you, if you can create gotta have it, you never have to sell anyone. Steve Jobs, in fact, I started giving talks to entrepreneur groups and someone said, you just figured out Steve Jobs. What do you mean? Well, when a new product came out, people would line up around the Apple store saying, I got to have it. Same with Tesla. And so I became a student of Steve Jobs. And a couple of years ago, I toured playing Steve Jobs coming back from the dead. I had the turtle. I'm all over YouTube. You know, Steve Jobs returns, Gulston. I had the turtleneck. I had the glasses on. And it was really a way to teach people, how do you think like Steve Jobs? How do you create got to have it? How do you create fanatical customers? And there's a formula. And the cornerstone of the formula is simply this. And I could be wrong, but if I was a betting person, I think you're going to write it down because everybody writes this down. What you want to trigger to create gotta have it is whoa, W-H-O-A, wow, W-O-W, hmm, H-M-M-M, yes. Whoa, Wow. Hmm. Yes. And the woe is they're preoccupied. The woe is I can't believe what I just saw, heard, or read. When I worked with suicidal patients, they couldn't believe what they just felt, which was hope. So that's the woe, that breakthrough. The wow is that's astonishing, amazing, unbelievable. You do that? Yeah, that's we do that every day. And then the hmm is this is too good not to use. This is too good to just, you know, say no to. And then the yes is, I figured out how to do it, sold. And in my presentation where I played Steve Jobs, I actually showed a video, and everybody will get this point. If you look up Steve Jobs Xerox Park, National Geographic, Steve Jobs, Xerox Park, National Geographic. You'll see a dramatization of Steve Jobs visiting Xerox Park and first noticing the graphical user interface. It's only 2 minutes long, and we're on audio, but you know, in your mind's eye, and you'll see the video. So the person playing Steve Jobs is skeptical because he's Steve Jobs. He's a know-it-all. Nothing can impress me. And then he sees the graphical user interface in the mouse. And you see his eyes open, and that's the whoa. And then he goes over to the technician, and he says, can I try it? And he sits down, and he starts sweating. That's the wow. And there's even music in this two-minute thing. It, you know, builds up. And then in the video clip, he looks back at Wozniak, and Wozniak famously said, once they go there, they're not going back. That was the, what do you think, Wozniak? And then at the towards the end of the clip, there's Walter Isaacson, who wrote the book. He said, Xerox didn't know what to do with it, but Steve Jobs took the idea back to Apple and created the Macintosh. So that's the yes. And what I would say to people is unless you're creating whoa, wow, yes, in everything people see, read, and hear about you and from you, you're creating, nah, no thanks, never mind, bye. That's compelling. That's got to have it.
Mm.
Can you see that in your mind, Doc?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, and it's a great example, of course, you know, modeling off Steve Jobs, who, as we all know, certainly had that magic touch. I mean, I remember being in Sydney about 2 years ago when one of the latest iPhones launched, and I thought, what's going on here? I didn't realize, because I didn't know that the Apple store was there about two blocks away, actually. So they were queued up for more than two blocks. So that that queuing up, that desire for the new product is not just, you know, it's worldwide, happens everywhere.
Yeah, and in fact, the thing we went through, and thank you for seeing the metaphor, because, and I know you're trying to translate my saying something that might be a little bit tangential, and people say, what does this have to do with me getting more, you know, clients as a coach? So I appreciate you're saying to your audience, it's a metaphor, people. It's a metaphor. Don't get so literal on him. And, but that idea of how to close more clients without answering questions, that's a whoa, wow. You know, when you draw people in, and the whoa, wow is you open me up more than anybody else who's spoken to me, and you got me to really focus on what was really urgent, what I need to do. So you expansively open me up, but then you focused me into something I need to do. That's a whoa, wow. And then the is, well, you got me so opened up, and now you got me so focused on what I need to do. That's a whoa, wow. And then, of course, you don't give them the answer. And then the is, well, you got to get me the answer, you know, because you know I'm actually clearer on what I told you, but you heard me and you opened me up and. Yeah, go get me the answer. So that's the whoa, wow, yes, even in that little script.
Yeah, I love it. And thanks for sharing that very vivid example, I think that's a really good lesson. And I love to say that everything is a metaphor. So I love to dig into things and see, well, how can that apply to what I'm most interested in right now? So that's the way I think with metaphors. Now, one of the things as we're speaking is that we're right in the middle of this COVID-19 pandemic and suffering social isolation. The wonderful thing about today's world, of course, is that we have all this technology available to us. So you and I can talk across the world. Other people can connect even though they can't physically get together in the same environment. But one of the things that I'm really interested in your view on, and I know you wrote an article about this recently, about leadership and what can we learn from great leaders and how they approach things at this time. So tell me a little bit more about what prompted that article and what some of the key points were from that.
Well, I've been fortunate. I've had seven mentors and they've all passed away. And my last mentor was a fellow named Warren Bennis. And anybody who knows about leadership and has read any books probably has happened upon On Becoming a Leader. And as I look out, now I'm in America and I'm not going to get political, but as I look at the leadership landscape, I think the world needs great leaders because the world is scared. And I wrote an article called Deconstructing, I don't know if I'm pronouncing her name correctly, Jacinda Ardern, Prime Minister of New Zealand, Angela Merkel, I think she's the Chancellor of Germany, and Pope Francis, because I said, they're great leaders. And then I said, what is it that makes them great? And I don't have the article in front of me, but I'll remember most of it. I said, well, what we feel towards them is we trust them. We have confidence in them. We feel safe around them. We respect them. We admire them. We like them. And we're inspired by them. Trust, confidence, safe, respect, admire, like, feel inspired. And if you think, well, that's too fuzzy. Well, how are you going to feel about a leader that you don't trust, you have no confidence in, makes it feel unsafe, you don't respect, you're embarrassed by them, you don't admire them, you don't like them, and they don't lift you up? Okay, so you won on that, Mark. And then I identified seven observable behaviors, and I actually came up with something, and it's a whole different approach to coaching, and it's the only coaching I do. And I'm friends with Marshall Goldsmith. He wrote the foreword to one of my books. But at this stage of my life, because I'm getting a little bit older, a lot of executive coaching is a company hires you. This is a high performer. We can't afford to lose them, but they're awful with people. So can you come and do a 360, and then we'll find out how they could be less awful. So their stakeholders are going to say, he or she needs to do more of this and less of this. And then you hold them accountable.
Is that still how it works in the corporate world? Well,
unfortunately, maybe in America it's more cutthroat. But the idea is, and then you hold them accountable to meeting those standards of their stakeholders. But what happened to me is the ache for good leadership because of where the world is. I've developed something called 360 aspirational coaching, and so I only work with people who, when they hear those seven qualities that they engender in other people, the trust, the confidence, etc., that they say, I want to be Jacinda Ardern. I want to be Angela Merkel. I want to be Pope Francis in terms of how I make other people feel. And if people find the article, I've given the whole program out. You want me to coach and train? We can do that. It doesn't matter. I've given the whole program up. Because there's seven observable behaviors. And what I would say is rate yourself, have the intention to be that great leader. And after you have any interaction with another person, even in your personal life, after you do a presentation, you rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10 of the observable qualities. How unflappable was I? Meaning, did I get defensive? Did I get my Did I get angry, or was I really calm, unflappable? The second thing is connected. Another word for that is present. You know, there's some people who are unflappable, but they're just robots. So was I present? Did people actually feel that I got where they were coming from and I actually cared about that? So rate that. And then after that is, I think it's, I may be missing out on one. How knowledgeable was I? Was I really just trying to, you know, shoot from the hip, you know, because I didn't want them to see that I didn't know what I was talking about? Did I really know what I was talking about? How wise was I? You know, did I focus on what was important? You know, was I able to put things in perspective and say, you know, I understand that, but I think we have to focus on more important things. So, and that's what wisdom is perspective. And then how gracious was I? Meaning, if something went well, did I really give the credit to the entire team and not myself? And also, if something went bad, did I take full responsibility for it? If something goes bad and it's on my watch, it's on me. That's what, you know, President Kennedy did that with the Bay of Pigs many, many years ago. He took full responsibility and said, we tried to invade Cuba and we failed and it's all on me. His ratings went through the roof. And then the final thing is being humble. You know, do you brag? Do you, again, without getting political, I think you know who I'm talking about. Well, you know,
I'm not sure. You'll have to help me out.
Leadership. He doesn't have a British accent. And anyway, and I think he, yeah. You know, we've done pretty good. You know, I mean, we're on top of this COVID virus thing. Anyway, but the idea is, so the only people I work for as a coach, I say. I only want to help you if you want to grow into be this kind of leader. If you don't want to, you know, get another coach. It's okay. And I'm nothing against you, but I'm getting older. And I got to leave the world in better hands than someone who just smooths out, you know, where they're ticking people off and your company doesn't want to lose you because you make them so much money.
Well, I love that. And I really love the article too. And I think, we'll include a link in the show notes to that article. And I strongly urge everyone to go read that because there's a lot of wisdom there and lots to learn from that. And I think it does certainly put leadership in the political arena right now in this crisis situation into some context and regardless of what your political views are. And it's also a good lesson, I think, for leaders in business and so on. You know, I said to you during that conversation, do they still do that in the corporate world? I mean, it's some time since I was in the corporate world, but that was the model that was typical in those days. And sometimes those people would it comes back to what you're saying earlier, that's ticking the boxes, but they didn't really change and they didn't really develop those leadership values. It was kind of like, okay, this is transactional. I've got to tick all these boxes. And that's what they did.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, this is fabulous, Mark. I could go on for ages about leadership and empathy, but I'm aware of the time and I'm respectful of your time. So I think it's a good point to move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round. And it's for our listener who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field to get some tips from your experience, and hopefully you'll share some more insightful information, but something that'll inspire them to go and do something awesome today as a result. So first question is, what's the number one thing you think anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
My late mentor, Warren Bennis, gave me this quote that he got from a playwright called Saul Bellow. And he said, be a first-class noticer, because noticing is different than looking, watching, and seeing. Looking, watching, and seeing is passive. And being a first-class noticer means you notice things without trying to put them in a bucket of your competence or what you're selling. And so it's also looking at things through a beginner's mind. I have a 16-month-old grandson. I just love him, and I just watch the way he looks at the world. I would also combine it. If you don't know something about design thinking, combine those things. So the rate limiting step in design thinking is the first one, which is empathy, which means let go of anything you're selling, anything you have, anything your skills are, and really be a first class noticer to where your customer client is coming from, what they really need and want, as opposed to you needing and wanting them to buy what you have. And the more you can do that, which is getting back to focusing on what they're listening for, they will lean in towards you. And something that I am currently doing is I collect excellent people. And so when I'm with a potential customer or client, I always listen into them with a beginner's mind. And frequently, I'll say, you could hire me, I could help you, but I think there's three other things you should do first. I think your priority shouldn't be hiring me. It should be these other things. And I have people that are excellent at those, meaning they are consistently better than very good if you don't already have those people. And it would be my pleasure to send you information or introduce you to them. I don't get a referral fee or anything, but they're just excellent. And I collect excellent people who are just really amazing. And I'm not going to tell them that I'm hitting on you. And what happens is, and I will send you an excellent person if that excellent person never gives me anything. But I'm also identifying the excellent people who tend to be reciprocators. Because you give an excellent person who's a giver, you give them a referral, they're going to be curious about, well, what do you do, Mark? Who's a good fit for you?
Hmm.
What are you excellent at? And so I am blessed at this stage of my life where I'm collecting excellent people. And in fact, I have a newsletter. You can go to markgoulston.com, GOULSTON.com, and you can find all kinds of blogs. I just give it all away. And you can contact me, and I think there's a link if you want to get my newsletter. So it's a twice a week newsletter. Sunday, it's just a download of all these things I'm noticing. I seem to be fairly prolific. I'm not selling stuff. I'm just getting stuff out so I can make room for the other stuff coming down the pike in my head. But then the other time, I send out a person who I deem to be excellent. And I tell you something about how they're excellent and what they do. And what makes them excellent. And so I've just recently started that. And so the second email is a pure introduction to someone who I think is excellent. And then there's links if you want to go find out more about them. And I'm really enjoying that. Also, it doesn't have to be, but I will say the people who I deem to be excellent that I'm teeing up, they tend to be givers and reciprocators. So, they often want to reciprocate the goodwill. They don't have to. But I kind of like living in the world this way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's lots of great advice there in that answer. I really like the idea of, certainly the beginner's mind comes up quite a bit, and it is fascinating when you watch young children and how they're so open to learning everything and not bounded by any limitations that somewhere along the line we've all picked up, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
You know, it's interesting. My late mentor, my last mentor, Warren Bennis, I remember when I turned 60, which was a while back, I said, you know, Warren, I think I'm too old. All these millennials, you know, I'm just, you know, it's their chance. And, you know, I'm getting to be this old white guy. And, you know, to be honest, I don't even want to hear from me. And he said, you know, Mark, my 70s were my best decade because, and he was a first-class noticer, plus people loved him. And he said, in my 70s, which I am in, he said, I started connecting all the dots of my lifetime. And they just started making connections. Mm. And the connections were just, you know, very satisfying. And actually, they seemed to be relevant for other people's success. And also in my 70s, you know, I really didn't care what other people thought. You know, some people are going to like me, some people aren't going to like me. I'm trying to be of service. And so that's what's happened is that I've been, I guess I've been a noticer for 40 years, maybe longer. And so there, so what I would say is don't prematurely have to come to a conclusion. You know, don't be in a narrow band and then live with confirmation bias. It was interesting. I often speak to groups of CEOs, of entrepreneurs, and recently I did that. And there was one in particular, a young woman, who was just, she was the most innovative. I could tell everybody wanted to be like her. And I said to the group, I said, you know, it was advertised that I'm going to talk to you about people stuff. And, you know, none of you like people stuff. You know, you delegate it to someone else because people are messy. You like vision, you like strategy, but you hate people. And I said, I can tell you about that. It's what you need to hear, but you don't want to hear about. I said, or I can tell you how to think like Jennifer. Hmm. And I said, I'll give you a choice because I was advertised as the people stuff guy. Let's have a break. And then they came back. And I said, what is it? They said, oh, we want to think like Jennifer. And I said, well, and then I said, well, here's the simple thing about Jennifer. She is not afraid of the unknown. She loves the unknown because she has confidence and trust that the unknown will reveal things to her. And she just has confidence that the unknown will reveal things to her, and then they start to crystallize into opportunities for a company. Whereas the majority of people, especially a lot of male left brain technological people, they're a little afraid of the unknown. You know, what if I can't deal with the unknown? What if the unknown doesn't need my skill set? And I said, Jennifer loves the unknown. And I said, Steve Jobs had a joy of discovery that was greater than what he discovered. He loved to discover. Now, he liked turning it into something because, you know, that gave him power, money, influence. And but, you know, he went to India. I mean, he loved discovering things. So rather than being afraid of the unknown, he loved it because he had confidence that the unknown would reveal something, opportunities. And to make a long story short, it blew her away. So now I'm coaching her. does that make sense? And look, the unknown can be scary because you can say, what if the unknown doesn't really reveal anything to me? What if I can't fit my strategy, my process into the unknown? And that's where. See, she's a first-class noticer and empathic in the first step of design thinking. So she can listen into her industry's market's needs with a beginner's mind. And what happens is things just start being revealed to her.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. I love it. Okay, now, do you have a favorite resource that you use most often?
I can't remember it, but I think it's by Andrew Sokol, could be wrong, but it's, I think it's on power questions, something like that. There are some great books in which the nature of your questions, you know, you really show your intelligence by the nature of your questions, not the nature of your answers.
Hmm. There's another book that you've reminded me of called The Questions Are the Answer. Now, I can't recall who the author of that is right off the top of my head either. It's somebody quite well known, but yeah.
So, you know, but you can look up Amazon, you know, Australia, whatever. You can look up question books and, you know, look at some of the reviews. But I think his last name is Sokol, S-O-K-O-L. I'm you know, just didn't have it ready.
Hmm. Okay. Well, we'll post it in the show notes so people can check. Okay. Now, what's the best way to keep a client on track?
One of the best advice I got from a friend of mine named Stan Barkey, he said, and also I'm taking advantage of something that Marshall Goldsmith speaks about, which is focus on the future that nobody has messed up yet. Because when you bring up something from the past, people get defensive. And so to combine those things, what Stan Barkey said, he said, this is the best single question that he used in management. And he was just beloved at State Farm. And he would say to people, going forward, in the event that you're not able to stay on track or follow through with some of the things we've agreed you're going to do to get better results, how do you want me to be with you? And they'll say, what? Yeah, you know, look, we all get distracted. You know, we like to hold on to priorities, but other things come in. You know, we got a relative with COVID. Who knows what? So going forward, in the event that I identify something that you're not able to follow through on, that you're now saying you want to, what's the best way for me to be with you? You know, do you want me to send you a text? Do you want me to send you an email? Do you want me to yell at you? You know, some people, you know, get off on abuse. I mean, so what's the best deal? Where my only concern is that we, you know, get you back on track to what we agreed on would be a good way for you to be more effective, more impactful, more successful.
Hmm. And then you implement that. What they tell you. Mm, great. I love it. Asking questions again. All right. Now, what's the number one thing you think anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
I really do think that if you focus on what the person's listening for, the more that you can get where someone is coming from that they haven't told you, that's really compelling because... And you do it in a way that's respectful, but they walk away saying, I never would have understood that or come up with that ever. So the more that you can focus on what they're listening for, and, you know, now again, you know, I have sort of a knack with this because of the empathic background, but I think what gives me my most influence is that often I can give people insights into themselves, their market, that they never would have come up with that they can immediately use. So what happened is when I explained in that group of CEOs, when I said, here, I'm going to deconstruct Jennifer, she's a first-class noticer, and she may not know what design thinking is, but she empathizes without memory or desire into her market. She likes the unknown, and she's a first-class noticer when the unknown is coming her way. That blew her away. She said, wow. She said, I've never seen it that clearly, but that's exactly what I do. You know, so the more that people can leave saying, you just gave me an insight into me that is relevant, that I can use to make me more successful and more effective. And I never would have got it anywhere else. Now, a lot of people say, oh, geez, I don't know if we can do that, Mark. I mean, you know, you have these abilities and you tune in and, you know, and we often say, you know, what are your goals? What are your 1-year goals? And what's the best way to hold you accountable? And let's reverse engineer. But what I'm suggesting, if you're listening to this podcast, I think you're more creative than you think you are, you know, and I'm not against process and steps, but the point is, if you could experiment with any of the stuff we've talked about, if you can ask yourself, what did I notice about the other person? Geez, if I had to review that conversation, where did I notice that they seemed more intrigued? In retrospect, where do I notice that they seem more interested? And then also, in retrospect, where do I notice when they'd heard enough and I talk too much? And don't beat up on yourself. Just say to yourself, if I had it to do over, what specifically would I have done? How could I have been better, more impactful? And make a note of it. And then make a note of it, because the next time you're in a similar situation, you know, it'll be top of mind. And, you know, hopefully you will, you'll be different, show up different.
Yeah, that's great. I love that. So focusing on what the other person is listening for, but then also doing some review and learning, being curious and being open to new possibilities. Well, thanks, Mark. This has been really fabulous. Now, you did mention your website before, but let's recap on that one. Where can people reach out to you and learn more about your work and your books and that article that we'll certainly post a link to, that article on leadership that we talked about, and maybe even get in touch to say thank you for what you've shared with us today?
Okay. Well, markgoulston.com, markgoulston.com. We've redone the website in the past 6 months, and we're pretty pleased with it. And LinkedIn, pretty pleased with the profile there. And also, if you go to Amazon, I have 7 books. You can find me at Amazon. I've got 540,000 Twitter followers, and I'm not sure why I have that. But, you know, if you're on Twitter, you can, you know, tweet me in some way. And so I think, you know, that. And then check out my wake-up call. So my wake-up call, I get to bring out of my guests, and they're great guests, Larry King, Mark Victor Hansen, Tim Brown, chair and former CEO of IDEO, Doug Conant, Esther Wojcicki, who's a force in herself, but she has these 2 lazy daughters. One's the CEO of YouTube and the other one's the CEO of 23andMe, you know, underachievers. Just a variety of interesting people. So I hope you'll check out my wake-up call. And that's enough. Yeah. That's enough. Let's not give them too much.
Okay. Well, we'll post links in the show notes to all of those places. And certainly, you know, you do have some wonderful guests on my wake-up call. So I've listened to a few episodes that were fabulous, and lots to learn there. All right. Now, do you have some parting advice for our listener today, Mark?
Well, this is an interesting thing, and it's slightly a left turn. So I'm a great believer that in staying at home, we have the opportunity to connect emotionally with the people we care about. But many people have lost the ability to connect emotionally because we all got caught up in the internet. So I have a blog called Still at Home, I think, or Staying at Home, staying at Home Mostly, I think it is. It's called the Bare Your Neck Challenge. And what you'll say to someone that you want to have a breakthrough with, and you can do this with a business partner, and you say to them, and you can read it on the blog, you could say, when would be a good time to get your undivided attention? And they're going to be worried. What's this about? You could say, no, it's not a crisis. It's not a crisis. It's actually, you know, something I wanted to ask you. And there's actually an apology in it.
Oh, really?
Because nobody gets unsolicited apologies. And they'll tell you. And don't do it right there and then, because you want to create the intrigue. And then when you do it, you could say, at my worst, at my absolute worst, how frustrated am I capable of making you feel about me, us? How badly am I capable of making you feel about yourself when I'm at my worst? And if you're talking about a personal relationship, sometimes they'll start crying because you're inviting them to get something off their chest that if they got it off their chest, you'd say, leave me alone. But you're inviting them to get it off their chest. And so you don't get defensive, but you watch them. And when they get it off their chest, you don't get defensive. You say, wow, that was awful. Give me an example of it. So you want them to tell you an example of you at your worst, because you're really wanting to give them the freedom to get off their chest. And then you look at it from their point of view and say, oh, that really was awful. And then you say, look at me. And you say, you deserve better than that. I'm going to fix this. And I'm sorry. I'm friends with if you go to something called Upping Your Elvis, a friend of mine, Chris Barres Brown, he's a trainer who trains huge companies. And we've become friends. And so if you look up Upping Your Elvis Goulston, he used that challenge to his whole community, which is big. And he has a video up there where he talks about how he did it with his wife. And what he said is, at my worst, how lonely can I make you? And she said, very. And he's just this wonderful, likable guy. And on the little video clip, he says, it was amazing. I'll use his accent. It was amazing, Mark. We haven't had a conversation like that ever. It was amazing. And you can do it too. You know, and then I talk about how to deliver it. But I think if you were to do that, you could do that with your kids, your teenagers. But it's a game changer.
Yeah, well, there's certainly, I think, a huge opportunity right now where people are in that confinement and in close quarters more than usual with their family and some loved ones that they live with. And I'm certainly noticing that, you know, people are doing lots more as families, as small groups. And I think it would be wonderful if we could keep that in the post-COVID world. So I think your advice about really reaching out, really listening to those people that you want to change the relationship with or really take it to another level, that's great. All right. Well, finally, Mark, who would you like me to chat with on a future InnovaBuzz podcast and why?
Well, there's so many people. innovative coaching. I'm going to introduce you to Chris Barres Brown, Upping Your Elvis. Have him on. He's a hoot. He's wonderful.
Yeah.
There's also someone else, Simon Leslie. He's in London. He's the CEO of Inc. And Inc. publishes all the in-flight magazines. So they're having to innovate because of where in-flight is. And but I think, you know, I'm happy to introduce you to them. You'll just have to send me a reminder so I can make the introduction.
Well, great. We'll get an introduction to both of those people from you and have them on the podcast in the future. So looking forward to those conversations.
Great.
Well, thanks a lot, Mark, for sharing your time and your insights with us so generously. There's been so much in this, and I certainly hope as a listener you're taking on board a lot of these things as metaphors for how they might fit in your business, and you're open to exploring the unknown in the way that Mark has suggested. So thanks a lot, Mark. I've really enjoyed this immensely. I've learned a lot. There's been lots of great stories. And I wish you all the best for the future, and let's keep in touch.
I would like that. So I'm going to give you a little coaching, but you may not need it. I'm very sensitive to language, and I like to use what I call experience near language. Because when I was with suicidal people, if I started sounding like academic or like jargon, I would lose them. So I'm very sensitive to language that people can understand and feel at the same time. That's called experience near language. And people whose minds are preoccupied often experience distant language they have to think about, but if their minds are constricted out of anxiety, they can't. Now it may be just the culture difference, and it may be that we Americans are just so crude and raw. But when I hear the word metaphor, I love it. It's eloquent, but it's experience distant. You know, I love it because it's so eloquent. But in this time of high anxiety, so it might be because and I think people get it. But again, it's from the illiterate side of my brain. I'd say, what is a metaphor? Is a metaphor like simile? Did I pass that class? You know, I go into this headspace because it's abstract. So if there was a different word for it, such as, I almost think like now analogy is not much better, but parallel or a different way, it's like regular language. But again, you know, you're more sophisticated than me. I mean, you're more refined than me. You know, I'm kind of a street person. You know, my wife tells me I don't have very good manners. But I'm very keen on experience near language when people's minds are anxious.
All right. Well, thanks for the feedback. I'll take that on board and give it some consideration. Yeah, see what else I can come up with.
Well, look, you can reject it. You could have said, you know, Mark, you're doing fine. And if that's the way you end a podcast, who needs you?
All right. I really have enjoyed this, and thank you for all that you've contributed. So.
Well, my pleasure. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that wonderfully insightful and informative conversation with Mark and took something away from his episode that you can put into place in your business today. I think that all the valuable tips Mark shared with us can be summed up with his quote, "Be a learn-it-all, not a know-it-all." I'd love to know what you took away from Mark's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/Mark Goulston. That is MarkGoulston, all lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Mark Goulston. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Mark there, as well as links to his website, the My Wake Up Call podcast, his books, his social media pages, and the other resources we spoke about in today's conversation. Mark suggested that we have a conversation with Chris Barras-Brown of Upping Your Elvis and Simon Leslie of Inc. Global on future InnovaBuzz podcast episodes. So Chris and Simon, keep an eye on your inboxes for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast courtesy of Mark Goulston. Tune in again to the next episodes of the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we've got yet more fantastic guests lined up, including copywriter and content creator Christina Torres and sales and profit coach Fabian Patel. Thanks for listening to this episode. Make sure you subscribe to the show to be reminded of new episodes. It's free to subscribe. Leave a review if you like. Even if you don't like me, I'm okay with that. I'm asking you to leave a review because it helps other people find this show. Go to innovabiz.co to join our marketing transformation community and access a free gift my team and I made for you. It's the Marketing Master Mini Class. We want to give you everything you need to transform your marketing into a human-centered, relationship-focused growth engine. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz.